Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And today, it's really rock and roll. The whole story of Fozzie. I'm talking every last detail from our first day together to the end of our most recent tour, December 4th in Calgary. Scott Bowling, who hosts a great show on YouTube called Good Company, won the Pledge Music bid to sit down and interview me, and he chose to focus on Fozzie. Got a great interview up there with Rich Ward. They just did 300,000 views on that. Lots of guys from Korn, guys from 3 Days Grace, St. Estonia. Go check out Good Company when you can. And check out the introduction of Chris Jericho and Rich Ward, which I explained to Scott in great detail. Our first time playing together, Fozzie's first live show. We talk about all the albums and how Fozzie's creative process has changed and grown over the years from a cover band like the original Steel Panther all the way to having 3 top 10 hits from the Judas record. We talk about the amazing Judas effect, how the last 18 months have just taken the band to a completely different level. I'm telling lots of great Fozzie stories, some that you might not have heard before. It's all things Fozzie with Chris Jericho. So I'm turning the hosting duties over to Scott Bowling. He's steering the ship for this episode of Talk is Jericho, and it starts now. All right, Scott, well, this is your, we have Pledge Music for the Judas record, and one of the things that you could do was get the opportunity to interview Chris Jericho for Talk is Jericho. So for the first time ever, I am not the interviewer here.
No pressure.
You are. So it's Scott Bowling, and you have some Good Company as your show. So you have some interviewing experience.
Yes, sir.
And now we'll see how good it is. We're going to turn it over to you for the first time ever. Talk is Jericho with special guest host Scott Bowling and special guest Chris Jericho.
Chris, man, thank you for having me, brother. I appreciate it.
Well, Matt, absolutely. This is exciting.
No
it's,
pressure.
It's weird to be on the other side of the coin for... actually, when we do talk and shop, Carl Anderson leads the charge, but never as a full-time guest, you are the guy, so
nice.
I'm very excited.
First of all, I just want to say that I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of your music, actually.
Cool. Thank you.
I grew up watching wrestling, but I kind of my passion is music.
Mm-hmm.
I have my own show called Good Company.
Mm-hmm.
I interview musicians. I've interviewed Michael Sweet, which I know you like.
Yeah,
him.
Great guy, yeah.
Bones.
So you interviewed a lot of guys.
A lot of guys.
Cool. And you're here now with Chris.
I'm here with you. Yeah. So I guess I want to run through your catalog. Kind of like how I do with Good Company is I run through each album and kind of find out the past and then go all the way up to what you're doing right now.
Sure.
And I brought these props, and you reminded me, you said, hey, this is not video.
Yeah, you said you wanted to show me.
But I just kind of want to show because I like the visual
thing. All of our records
thing.
Kind of on like placards sort of thing.
Right. So here's your first two, right? So I have.
Yes.
These are your first two, and they're mostly cover albums, correct?
Yeah, the first one is Fozzie, and that came out in 2000. And the second one is Happenstance. They came out in 2002. Yeah, but mostly cover records.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What happened was... when I was a kid, I wanted to be in a rock and roll band, and I wanted to be a wrestler. Those are kind of my two goals. So even though wrestling took off first, I still always played music. I recorded demos, and I had a band called Mr. Filthy. I had a band called Blackstone Menace. I had a band called Great Caesar's Ghost. And I would just record and demo songs, knowing that eventually I wanted to do something, you know, put together a band. And I was actually thinking about putting together a band when I was in WCW with some guys from Winnipeg that I grew up with. Just wanted to get something rolling. And around that time was when I met Rich Ward at a WCW show. He was doing some work with his band Stuck Mojo, and they had done a video for their song Rising, with Diamond Dallas Page and his flock. It wasn't his flock, but the flock and DDP and then Stuck Mojo. And it was kind of, they were playing in a wrestling ring and there was a big battle royal. And they're very much a wrestling-friendly band. And I remember I went and saw them in 98 with Testament in Orlando, just for something to do because I was just living there by myself. And my friend was like, well, make sure you go see the opening band. So I went and saw Stuck Mojo, and I saw they had little wrestling figures on the amps, and they were saying stuff like, to be the band, you got to beat the band, which is a paraphrase on Ric Flair, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And I just remember thinking like, wow, these guys are really interesting, but I didn't want to go say anything because I was just kind of a low-level guy in WCW. Little did I know that those guys were huge WCW fans, and they were fans of mine. So by this big act of happenstance, no pun intended, I meet Rich Ward backstage at a show in San Antonio, and then meet him again at another show in Greenville, and we start talking, and kind of kindred spirits, you know, talk about Stryper, talk about Journey, AC/DC, a lot of the bands that we both like. And then I was like, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, I want to put together a band. He goes, well, listen, he goes, we do this cover band in Marietta in Atlanta. It's called Fozzy Osbourne. It's really, you know, no pressure, really loose. Whoever's in town shows up and we just jam and play covers. And so I was like, well, had hurt my ankle and I was off from WCW for a few months. I said, why don't we do some shows? And that's kind of how it all started. The first two shows were in Marietta. The first Fozzy show ever was at a place called The Hangar in Marietta, Georgia. And that's kind of how it all began.
Was that when you guys were doing this? Was this when, is it Johnny Z that discovered you or who?
Well, yeah, what happened was because of, we had done these two shows and there was kind of a buzz about the band because Rich and Frank from Stuck Mojo, which had some real steam at the time, and Chris Jericho from WCW, about to go to WWE, it was right around that time, we're in a band together. So there was actually a bidding war for Fozzy, sight unseen and sound unheard, just because of who was in the band, which was...
That's got to make you feel good.
Well, yeah, and it was back in the days when, you know, before the record business really collapsed. And I think we got like $75,000 as an advance for our first record, which is insane for a band that... You've never even heard one of their songs. We're just doing covers, you know. And Johnny Z and Megaforce was the label that signed us. So it just kind of all started from there, you know.
So you put one cover album out, and then you toured on that one for a little bit. And
we
then...
never really toured. That's the thing. Like the caveat with Fozzy is because I was so busy with the WWE at the time, they knew that it wouldn't be a touring band. It wouldn't be a touring project. It would just be a, you know, just a kind of a, we would do sporadic shows when we could, but never anything big. You know, I don't think we did a full tour until the Chasing the Grail record. I mean, we did some stuff for All That Remains as far as like short European tours and stuff. But,
yeah,
you know, so yeah, it basically all started out as just, you know, just kind of basically a side project, you know, and because it was just covers, I thought, well, that's kind of boring. Why don't we put together a story, do like a Blues Brothers type of thing or a Spinal Tap or a Steel Panther. We were like the original Steel Panther.
Yeah, before Steel Panther.
Yeah, and came up with this whole thing where the songs that we were covering were really our songs that were stolen from us while we were stuck overseas in Japan and on a bad record deal. And we actually made a mockumentary.
I saw that on YouTube.
Called Unleashed Uncensored Unknown. It was on MTV. It was made for MTV. And that's the best thing about YouTube is it's up there now. You can go watch it. It was before, you know, it's on DVD and then how do you get it out there? But yeah, it's on YouTube and it's actually really funny. We made it on a shoestring budget in 2 days, total improv. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the story of the first record right there.
So after your first record, you did another one and then that was basically cover songs. But your third album is probably All That Remains. That's probably one of my favorite Fozzy records, actually.
Yeah, people love that record.
I love that record.
And just to say, like, kind of, the first record, Fozzy, was 8 covers and 2 originals. Mm-hmm. The second record, Happenstance, was, I think, 6 covers and 4 originals. And what happened was we had an opportunity to do the Howard Stern show.
Wow.
At the time, Howard was doing this thing where he would, he claimed that his band, his celebrity band, was better than any other celebrity bands. You know, yeah. I think, you know, Corey Feldman and Tina Yathers and Doug Flutie and... Bacon and all those type of guys, and he had his band there called The Losers. So he was like, my band The Losers is still better than any celebrity band. So Fozzy got invited, and We whipped his ass, basically. But when we got there, we did our song To Kill a Stranger. Was it To Kill a Stranger that we did? I think it was To Kill a Stranger. And we're sitting there before the show, and we're like, we can't do this show with like the wigs on and all this stuff, because we had all adopted characters,
yeah,
like Steel Panther, like the Blues Brothers. So right. I was like, fuck it, let's just take all that off, mm-hmm. and then we'll just be ourselves. And that's when we're like, listen, we are a great rock and roll band. We lost to the Losers, but we're the only band to ever get one vote. It was two votes for the Losers and one for us. And then after Howard said, listen, man, he goes, the only reason why I won is it's my show and they're told to make sure I win, but you guys killed me and I'm never doing this again.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was pretty cool. And
you beat Corey Feldman too. So that's
we beat Feldman. Cool. That's always a plus. We always try. And that's when I was like, you know what? Like, and Rich and I were like, dude, we should just do our own thing. And that's, you know, 2005 was All That Remains, which was our first all original record with us as ourselves.
That's great. I love, it seems like, are a couple of those songs like 6-beat songs? Because I remember like hearing like Test and...
Yeah, Rich had done a side project where he had done a band called 6-Speed.
Right.
And on this record, The Test and The Way I Am...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, The Test and The Way I Am were two 6-Speed songs that we kind of fozzied up a bit.
Did you listen to like the originals and you're kind of...
I love the 6-speed stuff.
That's awesome.
And I think Rich's idea was to use a couple of those songs because they were done deal. And the 6-speed never got a record deal, so they were just ready to go. And what we did on this record, too, All That Remains, is we went and got all of our friends, because Fozzy Far Beyond was always much more critically acclaimed by other musicians first because of the guys in the band. I mean, Rich Ward is second to none as a guitar player. And he's now just getting his real due. But at the time, you know, Zakk Wylde was a big fan, and Mark Tremonti was a big fan, and those type of guys. So on All That Remains, Zakk appears on it.
Yeah,
on
that's
Wanderlust.
So cool. And Bone Crusher. How'd you get Bone Crusher on there?
Bone Crusher is a rapper. We wanted to do kind of a combination of a rock vocal, a rap vocal, and a rhythm and blues, like a Tina Turner type thing. So that song has all of those elements. Excuse me. And then on The Way I Am, Mark Tremonti's on that, and Nameless Faceless Miles Kennedy's on it.
That's
on. So it's like the early days of Alter Bridge as well. So,
and I didn't mean to skip over Zakk Wylde, but I love that song he's on.
Thanks, Wanderlust, man.
That's a great song.
It's a great tune. It's funny because now, as we move through the catalog, it gets harder and harder to pick a set list, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And all of the songs that we used to play live, we don't play anything from the first record. We just recently dropped Eat the Rich. We were playing that. It was kind of, people always like that. And we played Feel the Burn and End of Days for years, but then you write better songs. Mm. And Happenstance, we were doing Stranger, Free Will Burning. We used to do Crucify Yourself and With the Fire. Those are all gone now. We'll do Free Will Burning once in a while for VIP. We do a little bit of a mini concert before the show and To Kill a Stranger, but those are gone. And so the only song we do off the first four records actually now is Enemy.
With your catalog growing like this, would you ever think about doing like an evening with Fozzy?
Yeah, I think so. And the thing is too, that like our songs now, I think the last three records, we've really found who the Fozzy sound is. Mm. And so those songs are just so much better, you know, and it's fun to go back and play like, you know, To Kill a Stranger. But over the years, I mean, there's almost two separate versions of the band, because there's this band that existed from 2000 to 2005. Then we took a hiatus for 4 years, and then Grail came out in 10, and that's where it's been 2010, 2012, 2014, 2017. And those songs are just so much more superior, and more people know them.
Right.
You know, there's longtime Fozzy fans that will still like, you know, To Kill a Stranger, but I'm sure it's when Metallica plays like Motor Breath, you get like half the crowd that's going nuts and the other half going like, this isn't on the Black Album, what the hell is this? So you got to pick the songs that work the best for when you're playing and touring. And you know, when we're headlining, we do 14 or 15 songs, and when you're opening, you get 45 minutes. I mean, we just did 45 minutes with Steel Panther, had 9 songs. What do you choose? There's so many songs, and sooner or later some of your favorites have to get left off.
Did you guys collaborate with the Steel Panthers though? Like, did you do any songs together on stage? Or?
We did not together. Michael Starr sang on Tonight on the Do You Want to Start a War
record. I love
that
song. Great song.
Yeah, he sings the middle part. But that's just a great mix of guys, because they're just like us. They're fun guys. We always have a good time. And their audience comes to their shows to have fun. Mm. And that's kind of what Fozzy's crowd does too. So it was a great mix.
So this next record, you guys took like a little hiatus, didn't you?
Four years.
And this was your first time, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys were a 4-piece on this album?
Well, we were a four-piece because we had just lost our guitar player, Mike Martin. If you look on all the records, Frank Fonseray, Rich Ward, and Chris Jericho have played on every record. Mm. All that remains, Frank was gone for a while. We had a bit of a falling out and let him go. And brought in another drummer called Eric Sanders, who we call Rain Man because he knew everything about nothing. And also realized that he was not a good replacement for Frank Fonseca because Frank and Rich play so good together. They're like the Van Halens or like, you know, a Dimebag and Vinnie Paul. They're made to play with each other. And I remember the first night we played with Eric Sanders, and he was a great guy and a good player, but just not the right style. And we're looking at Rich going, man, you made a big mistake. And then we had a guy called Mike Martin coming in to play guitar, and then Mike left. So we brought Billy Gray in then at that point. And Billy did not play on the album, but he was on the tour, and Billy's been with us since 2010.
Oh, he's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's great. He's a great player. So the pictures were taken as a four-piece, even though it's like the Def Leppard, I think it was the Adrenalize album, when they take pictures as a four-piece, even though you have another guy coming in pretty soon.
Okay, man. And I love that song. What's the single you guys did was Martyrs.
Martyr No More.
That's a great
song.
Yeah,
once again, I mean, you look, Under Blackened Skies we played, Martyr No More, Grail, Madness Begin, Pray for Blood, God Pounds His Nails, Friday 13th. I mean, we did all those songs live at one point. And then they just slowly get whittled away. And Martyr and God were the last two. Martyr just, there's certain songs, like I just didn't like singing that song anymore. It was boring to me. Even though a lot of people love it, and it's a great tune, but just wasn't fitting the vibe of the show. Mm-hmm. And then God Pounds His Nails was the last one, and even that one. At the beginning of this tour, the Judas tour, we were playing it and going, like, this is just not, it's just not cutting it anymore, you know, and that was dropped as well. So, like I said, from the first four records, the only song that we do still is Enemy.
Wow. Okay, man, moving right along. Sin and Bones is a great record.
Yeah.
I love this one. Actually, I think that's vinyl
the first really great record for me.
What was it like having your first vinyl? This your first vinyl?
Yeah, it was our first vinyl. And, you know, like, this was also in Century Media Records. It was the first time we've been on a major label. Like, Megaforce was fine. The first two records were Megaforce. The third record was, if you look, it was Ash Records. It was the name of my son. We had our own record company because nobody would sign us, which kind of was a drag.
Never knew that.
And then Chasing the Grail was done through an Australian company called Riot Records. So, I mean, dude, we didn't have anything. And then finally signed with what was a pretty major label for us in Century Media. So, you know, when you're playing in the big leagues, one of the kind of cool things about it was we got our first LP, and it's you know, first vinyl record, and you know, having a CD is huge. There's even cassettes of the first Fozzy record.
You guys need to do cassettes.
Believe
That's
it or
awesome.
Not.
Really?
Actually, who was I talking to? I was talking to Biff Bibber from Saxon the other day. He wants to bring back cassettes. Or we could do like Cheap Trick put out 8-track because they knew they'd have the biggest selling 8-track of the year. But to actually hold an LP, a vinyl record in your hand, that to me is when we really made it, you know? Mm. And this was also the first record that Paul DeLeo played on.
Wow.
This is the Fozzy lineup. Like, yes. This is your classic, you know, Iron Maiden lineup or Aerosmith lineup, you know, Metallica with Cliff Burton, whatever your classic lineup is, this is Fozzy.
And Paul used to play with Billy Joel, right? I mean,
Paul did play with Billy Joel.
Big guy.
Yeah, he did play with Billy Joel for a tour. He played with Paul Simon.
Wow.
And he plays actually for the last 10, 15 years with Nana, 99 Luftballons.
Oh, yeah.
She's really popular in Germany. And
big compliment.
So, it was a real huge step up for us.
And Sandpaper was a big, big hit.
Sandpaper
was
a big hit. It should have been bigger, but we're still kind of opening the doors of the radio world, which, you know, it was a slow climb. We finally got there with Judas, but Spider My Mouth still in the set. Sandpaper still in the set. Blood Happens, we played it, but we dropped it. Inside My Head, we've dropped that one. Sin and Bones, still in the set. I love playing that every night. She's My Addiction was in the set for a while, but that was dropped. Shine Forever was in the set for a while, but that was dropped. So, you know, once again, every album, we ended up playing about 6 or 7 songs from it. But, yeah, this one was a great record. And, of course, Sandpaper with M. Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold.
That's amazing.
And She's My Addiction had the guitar solo by Phil Campbell from Motorhead.
Wow.
So, you know, we always have somebody on the record. And on Chasing the Grail, the guest was Jeff Waters from Annihilator, who did the solos for God Pounds His Nails and Martyr, because we needed a shred solo and Billy wasn't in the band yet. So I called Jeff, who's one of the best shredders in the world.
So when you guys did Sin and Bones, was this when you guys were thinking, you know, we need to change our sound up? Because do you want to start a war with such a big change, it seems like, in styles everything?
I think it takes every band a few records to really find out what their style is. And when I talk about the two versions of Fozzy from 2000 and 2005, and then the one that started with Chasing the Grail, and that's also when Rich and I said, listen, we need to take this seriously and do this full time, make this the priority. And you can see the ascension of the band since then, since 2010 to now. I think a lot of that had to do with the commitment, Rich's songwriting, which has always been great. We got more focused. There's still, on Sin and Bones, there's still Storm the Beaches, which is a 14-minute song, and Grailhead Wormwood, which is a 14-minute song. And that's when we were going through our, you know, Rush, Iron Maiden, Halloween, you have to have an epic. And I even had an epic written for Do You Want to Start a War called, it was about the Donner Party. Oh. I think it was the working title was Donner Party, which is this group of people that were going through the mountains and had a snowstorm and ended up having to eat each other.
Oh.
Yeah, feel good stuff. But this is still, like, when you're talking about songs like Spider, Sandpaper, and Sin and Bones, like I said, those three will be in the set until the end of time. And that's when you can see, okay, the hook is coming. It's groovy, a lot of harmonies. True. That's when we really started getting to that style of things. And that really focused more on Do You Want to Start a War more than ever.
That's great. And I love, didn't you guys win, like, some kind of strip club, like, song?
We didn't win.
Lights Go Out?
Yeah, Lights Go Out. So, Do You Want to Start a War? The single was Lights Go Out, which was, I mean, it was the first song that we ever had that officially charted on rock radio. I think it went to like 29 or 28 or something like that. But on the strip club DJ charts, it was top 10 for months. And I was like, I had no idea. And at the time, Billy, our guitar player, was working at the Cheetah here in Atlanta.
Oh.
And he said, hey, man, we're on the strip club charts. I'm like, what are you talking about? Can you get that for me? So he got it. And lo and behold, there's like Fozzy, you know, Jay-Z, whoever the hell else they're dancing to, with Lights Go Out being right in the middle of it. And the thing about Lights Go Out as well is that was a song that was written by Rich and Johnny Andrews, who will come into play big time for the Judas record. But that song was, when I first heard it, I was like, that is cool. Because it's a very much a strip club song, but it's almost like a dance club, heavy metal, I don't know, sexy, really cool song.
Right.
That we had never written anything like that before. Mm. And then if you follow that up with Do You Want to Start a War, which is huge in the set, yes, you got two songs that are once again standing out, being very different, but also very Fozzy. Mm-hmm. You know, and then Bad Tattoo, we still play that. So. Died With You, we just dropped tonight. We use it once in a while. Anarchist, we still play. And SOS.
SOS is a great cover.
It was supposed to be a B-side. Wow. But it turned out so great, I was like, wow, we need to put that on the record. And I remember, I think it was Rich's suggestion. I was suggesting Devil Woman by Cliff Richard.
Right, yeah.
And also Destroyer by the Kinks. Paranoia, it destroying. And then Rich came up with SOS. And I was like, oh, that's a good one. And then we're like, dude, this is so good. It has to be on the record. And live, it goes over huge.
Right.
Every night. We just did Europe with Steel Panther, and when you do SOS, even people that have no idea who you are go crazy for that song. So, yeah, man. I mean, that was the real breakthrough, was Do You Want to Start a War?
Who?
Made it to, like, number 50 on Billboard.
That's
and,
amazing.
You know, that's when we really started seeing, okay, this band is starting to really get into the zone now.
Mm. Who filmed your video for When the Lights Go Out? Because that was somebody.
Lights Go Out was a lyric video, and I thought that we made a mistake by not making a video for it. And it actually just passed 2 million views a couple days ago, which is part of the Judas effect, which I'll tell you about in a bit. But the song "Do You Want to Start a War?" We had a video, and it was more of kind of a like a Dio rock and roll children, where you stand up for yourself and the music of Fozzy makes you into a guy. Still a little bit cheesy. I mean, we've had some cheesy videos in the past, as I think every band has. Sandpaper was kind of a homage to Evil Dead. This one was kind of a homage to Dio rock and roll children. Like I said, there's also a big dance routine in the middle of it. I mean, with the fire, had a big Soul Train dance in it as well.
So we've always had, you know, those kind of videos where you're like, okay. But, you know, I think Do You Want to Start a War? It was really floundering at like 300,000 views. And then once again, when Judas came out, everything got sucked up. Like Sandpaper went from 1 million to 3.5.
Oh.
And War hit 1 million. And Lights Go Out hit 2 million. And Enemy hit 1 million. So all of these videos were just getting bigger and bigger because of Judas's popularity.
Do you guys tell a difference like in Apple Music and stuff with Judas on the rise, with everybody buying singles now? Was everything growing?
Yeah, well, the
growing?
Thing with Judas is that people actually are buying the single. I think it's done like 150,000 sales, which is crazy. That's sales. It's not streams.
That's amazing.
You know, and it's streamed 13 or 14 million, and the record has as well, which is crazy. And I'm holding in my hand now the Fozzy Judas record, which it bothers me because the first two, the first one's a double gatefold. The second one's got lyrics and everything. And the third one, Judas has nothing. It's a paper thing. It's like, well, how cheap is that?
What happened?
I don't know. Ask the record company. I remember whenever I bought an AC/DC record back in the 80s, they would never have anything. It would just be a paper sleeve. I was like, well, we got AC/DC on that one. But a great cover. I think the last two covers have been our best two covers we've ever had.
Absolutely.
And then, I mean, like you said, the Judas record, I mean, dude, it took everything to a completely different level for us. You know, with Judas, the song came out in May, and I remember Alicia Dove, who's in the Judas video. She's one of the girls, the redheaded girl that's one of the dancers in it. She goes, well, what's your goal for this video? And I was like, well, Sandpaper's at 1 million, so I hope to get to 3. We had 1 million views in a week, and it's almost at 16 million views now.
That's crazy.
Probably more by the time you guys listen to this. And the sales, and then the chart position, it's 6 months it stayed on the charts. It started at 70. And climbed all the way to number 5 for like 5 weeks. Number 1 on Octane for 5 weeks. Like it became this monster to where it is our You Shook Me All Night Long. It's our Enter Sandman. It's our Pour Some Sugar on Me. And I'm not saying it's as big as those songs, but it is synonymous with Fozzy. It's a hit single.
Right.
And when you have a hit single, it changes everything. And you can see that in the offers that we're getting, the merch that you're selling, the people coming to, like, we sold so many tickets for our tour in the last week. We've never sold this many tickets before. Now, for Metallica, it's probably nothing. But for us, to see what we sold, I couldn't believe it.
Absolutely.
You can really see, I call it the Judas effect. All of this great stuff is happening because of the song Judas. And then Painless, the second single, debuted at number 29. You know, Judas debuted at 70. Painless debuted at 29. So you can see automatically how many doors it opened right off the bat.
That's amazing. I love the videos you have for Judas and Painless. And I like how you're using Nathan Mowry, who I'm starting to use now.
Right.
But how did you meet with, how'd you hook up with Nathan?
Funny story, DDP, Diamond Dallas Page. I worked with him for years in WCW and WWE. And then a couple of years ago, my back was really messed up. And doctor said, you need back surgery. And I refused to get back surgery. But I got a call from DDP. He's got his own DDP yoga, which became a huge influence in my life, saved my life, and everything feels great now. And he's got a performance center in Smyrna, Georgia. And I came there to, he asked me to film some stuff for his website, and Nathan works for DDP. He's on salary as his, you know, video guy, videographer. And Paige was like, listen, you ever need a place to film a video, or you need my crew, let me know. And I was like, well, dude, we're going to do a video very soon. And Nathan was the guy, and we just had this really cool idea. There's a video from a Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion record called Garden of Eden, and it's Axl in the forefront and the guys in the background kind of moving really quickly and fast. And I said, I want to do that. I think Sick of It All has a kind of a homage to it. And then we said, well, what if we take that, but what if we add kind of a Shining element to it? And what I mean by that, if you've seen the movie The Shining, when Jack Torrance starts losing his mind, he's like between two dimensions. Like there's ghosts talking to him,
right?
But he's still alive, but he's not. And we thought, what if we put all of these weird things going on in the video, film it at half speed, so a 4-minute song becomes an 8-minute song. And when you play it back at normal speed, it's very erratic and fast. And so that's what we did. And if you look at that video, never do the band and the characters, the clowns and the wolf and the rabbit and the girls, they never interact with each other. They don't pay attention to each other because they're not in the same dimension. They're in two different planes. They just happen to be intersecting. And so that's what we did. And the fastest video, literally, dude, we had three takes to get it right because Nathan's on fire in it.
Yes.
And there's like a confetti can. We only did three. So we rehearsed all day and did the three of them. But it was not so hard to do because it's like if it's slowed down, you are beautiful.
Is that how you sing it?
On the inside. Yeah, it's slow.
Wow.
Keep that in mind. We'll come back to that in a second. So we filmed it. I went to the bar to have a drink with my friend. I think we finished at like 8. And by 10, I had the finished video.
That's incredible.
That's how quickly they turn over.
Wow.
So Painless, we decided, well, let's continue the theme. Let's do a sequel for the video. I hadn't seen a sequel for a video in years. And let's make it like we'll film it at double speed, right? So that meant that we do like you take a 4-minute song and move it down to I think it was like a minute 45. Problem is, whereas Judas, I had time to get my bearings. Painless, I didn't. My left drifting between a whisper and a scream. You have to get it all the way through. That's how it's. That's literally how fast it was. Killing me one breath at a time. Caught on your web, I'm paralyzed. So you got to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. Because if I mess up one word, and there's a couple things in the video you can see where the lip singing is not completely on it, but when you play that back at normal speed, it makes it very slow and soupy, almost like you're underwater, you know? And that's where some of the same characters are in it. Alicia's in it again. The clown's in it again. We had another girl, Karen, who's our makeup girl, looks great in a corset. So she is carrying the wolf's head and the rabbit's head. She's killed them.
I love how Rich is on that creepy tricycle.
And the difference now is that Chris is the only guy still in the dimension. Now the band is also in the other dimension with all these creatures. Oh. So I'm not interacting with anybody, but they're all kind of following me to maybe drag me into this world as well. Mm. That was filmed twice. The first day we filmed it, we underestimated how hard it would be. Because Judas was so easy. Because once again, like I said, too, it was all one take, by the way.
Wow.
All one take. So with Painless, it's like, oh, this shouldn't be too hard. Judas was like freaking, you know, 2 hours. This will be even quicker. Wrong. First of all, we went to a site where we were supposed to get permits, but somebody didn't get them. And we basically had the cops show up begging them to let us
During filming,
to kick us out. And we had rehearsed, still weren't getting it, had some pretty lame, you know, copies that we can't use this, you know, lame takes. So we went to the venue where we're filming, where you see Painless, it's behind a church where we rehearse, and we banged that out a bunch, but we're losing sunlight. So the one that we saw that was okay, the lighting was really bad. Mm. So then it's like, well, what do we do? Like, we can't put out this half-assed video after Judas has been such a success. It's very important. Yeah. You know, I think the video was part of the success of the song and vice versa. So we had to get everybody back about a month and a half later, 2 months later, and do it again.
Oh, wow.
And really take our time and get it right. And we did about 7 takes. And then this time we set a drum set on fire. So once again, cool. You know, you have the fire that burns only so many times and then you're done. So we got a take that we all loved and, you know, put it together and released it. And it did a million views in a month.
That's insane.
Not in a week. Like if you would have told me we'll do a million views in a month before Judas, I'd be like, oh, are you kidding me? And I was like, yeah, it's only did a million views in a month. But like I said, but the chart position is higher. So one had the high video, low chart. The other one had high chart, low video. But I mean, dude, if you can do a million views in a month, I will take that any day of the week. So yeah, you can just see like all of these things happening and all of this buzz about the band because, you know, A, they're great songs, and B, we put a lot of time into doing the videos right.
Right. I love how there's so many songs that are hits, and I love how you guys talk about that. I love 3 Days in Jail, and what I was going to ask you is, I know, I think I've heard you say you originally wrote that with different lyrics,
yeah,
and they changed them. Would you ever talk about what they originally were written about, or is that something you want to keep private?
3 Days in Jail is written from experience when I spent 3 days in jail.
Right.
It was actually here in Atlanta. So when I was in jail, which was the worst, but I had to do it to kind of, you know, you do the crime, you pay your time, and it was a DUI, which, you know, we don't have to get into, but point was, that was what I had to do. It was either, you know, when you travel as much as I do, you can't have that on your record. It's very bad. And, you know, I was over the limit but I was hanging out with the cops. They didn't put me in jail. I was gone in 30 minutes. But once you get brought in, you're in the system, and that was it. And I was like, but they didn't even take my keys away. Wow. Right. But once again, I'm not complaining. Mm-hmm. I was over the limit. That's it, dude. You know, this is before Uber. Now, if anybody gets drunk driving now with Uber, you're just an idiot. Because I Uber everywhere now. If I have one drink, I'm Ubering. I'm never doing it again. I learned my lesson, as I should have. But I remember being in jail, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to get something. I'm going to write a book about it, and I'm going to write a song about it. Hmm. And they'd given me this shitty little pen that had, you know, when you get like a Bic pen, but they just take the ink thing out, they take the plastic tube away, because I guess the plastic tube is a weapon, even though, once again, they didn't take my car keys away. I still had it in my hand. So, it was, I was trying to write with this little shitty pen. I had some paper in there. And then there's this guy looking in the cell, because I had my own cell, which meant I couldn't leave it. But there's other people that are kind of walking around, because you have that right if you're like in general. And the guy's kind of looking at me like, you know, I'm not there to make friends with anybody, because this is a bad place. I'm like, you know, get out of here. Leave me alone. Get out of here. So I put a piece of paper up in the little window so he can't see me. And then I hear this like sound, like kind of a type of a sound, like kind of like this, that sort of thing. And I look, and there's like a space under the door, and he slid a real pen under the door. And so I looked at the guy, and I was like, I took the paper down. I'm like, thanks, dude. He's like, yeah. So I had this like contraband pen. But that's when I wrote the story of what happened to get into that position. Fast forward to the Judas record, and you're talking about, and I mentioned Johnny Andrews before Flace Go Out. Johnny produced this record and co-wrote all the songs with Rich. And I only have co-writes on three of them, which are Wordsworth Way, 3 Days in Jail, and Running with the Bulls.
Wow.
And usually I write all the lyrics, but for this album, Johnny is a lyric writer, and he knew what he wanted, and Rich and I decided he's in charge. Whatever he says goes. It's like a Bob Ezrin with Kiss, or Bob Rock with Metallica, like no messing around. And so, you know, every week I'd get these new songs. It's like, well, didn't write that one. Because I submitted like 14 songs as usual, but they just, none of them were getting used, right? So finally, I 3 Days in Jail comes out. I'm like, oh, this is great, 3 Days in Jail. And I'm listening. I'm like, these are not my lyrics. None of these are my lyrics. All I got was the song title. So, you know, you, when you go through the publishing, when you put together the record, like, Wordsworth Way, like I wrote all the lyrics. That's my song.
Yeah. That,
so that's 50% for Chris. But for 3 Days in Jail, I think it's like 40% Johnny, 40% Rich, 15% for Hyro the Hero, who did the rap on it, 5% for Jericho for the song title. I'm like, dude, you guys can keep it. I'll give you the song title for free. That one's on me. So, but, you know, like I said, we didn't even care about any of those things as far as who wrote what. It doesn't matter. All that matters is that the album is great, and we've got the album of our career that's just gone through the roof in so many different ways. So yeah, I'm really glad that we worked with Johnny. It wasn't easy at times to give up control of your project. Like, who's this Johnny Andrews telling Rich and Chris how to do a Fozzy record? We know what to do. But he had a lot of great suggestions and ideas, and you know, like I said, the proof is in the proverbial pudding. Look at how good the record is and how good it's done.
When Metallica did the Black Album, I know they documented everything. Did you guys ever discuss doing something
like that? I
wanted
to do that and really do kind of a documentary, but we didn't know Nathan at the time. He's the guy to do it. And when we did Fozzy Across America, when Judas came out, we did 3 shows in 3 different time zones in 1 day. We did Fort Myers in the morning, El Paso in the afternoon, and Las Vegas at night. We brought Nathan with us to do a documentary, and that's really well done. And he also did a making of for the Painless video and one for the Judas video as
When's all that coming out, the 3 shows? And
that is done. It's just a matter of finding the right place. You know, you don't want to just drop it. I know that the making of Painless is ready to go, but I thought, well, when it hits 1 million views, then we'll release it. And we're almost at 1 million now. Like I said, probably at this point, as we're talking, it might even be at 1 million. And then we'll release it once we hit 1 million views. So, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff that we've done, that we've got. And a lot of that is having the right guy. 996,516 views. So we'll get there by the end of the day. But, you know, you want to have the right guy to be able to do all this stuff with. So he's the right guy. He gets the band. He's one of us. He's a great guy. We're actually working on another project together now.
Oh, great.
So, you know, he's part of the team. And that's another important thing with Fozzy. We're finding the right guys for the team, because it's not just the guys in the band. It's the crew. It's the record company. Now, Century Media got bought by Sony Records. So now we're on Sony Music, which is crazy. Like, we're on Sony. Like, that's insane. So, you know, you're taking a band that, you know, 3 albums ago we were putting out ourselves, and now we're on Sony Music. So, once again, another very cool thing that's happened at the right time and right place.
I guess the last question I want to ask you for this album is the song you wrote about your mom. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Wordsworth Way.
Yeah. How tough was it writing something so personal?
I mean, was that... I remember Richard asked me before if I wanted to write a song about my mom. I just wasn't interested in it. But what happened was, when you two released the record that everybody got in their Apple Tunes that caused the big, was it called Songs of Innocence?
I think so.
Songs of Innocence, I think it was called. I love you too. I love the record. And there's a song on it called Cedarwood Road, which is Bono wrote that about his childhood home and his mom. And I was like, well, I'd like to do a version of that. Because I'm always the type of guy that when I see a song title that interests me, after all the music I've listened to see something intriguing, I find it very interesting. So if I'm looking at the back of this as a fan, I would see Wordsworth Way and go, well, what is that all about? You know, it's like Drinking with Jesus or Running with the Bulls. That sounds interesting. Wolves at Bay. What does that mean? So Wordsworth Way is the street that I grew up on. And, you know, it kind of deals with, you know, my mother's death and all that sort of thing based around, you know, growing up on Wordsworth Way. And kind of the last time I ever saw her, you know, not to get too deep, was she was standing on the edge of the drive. And, you know, I saw her a few times after, but I always remember that rear view mirror, seeing her, you know, on the edge of the drive. So that song is written all about that. And it was the one set of lyrics that I gave Rich and Johnny. And I said, listen, guys, like, if you guys want to chop it up or change it, but I'd really like to use this song. It means a lot to me. And B, if you decide to use it, please don't change anything. And if you do, let me change it. Because, you know, sometimes you got to cut and paste it. But it tells a real story, you know. And it turned out to be one of the best songs on the record. It's so epic, you know. Rich's guitar solo is great. The orchestration is great. And once again, these guys just went above and beyond for all the programming. And like Weight of My World, we're going to start That's doing that song. Live now. I mean, there's so much going on in that song. You never would have heard that on a Fozzy record 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you hear that with Burn Me Out, and Weight of My World is like that. And, you know, there's so much orchestration of Judas and Capsized. And it's just a really, really cool record with a lot of ear candy on it.
I was thinking about your title, Drinking with Jesus, and Striper's new album title. Now, been out of shape, everybody's getting about it. I love the title, like you said. It keeps you guessing, you know, what's the song really about?
Right, you're talking about Goddamn Evil, the Striper. Yes. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I remember people were all uproar when they put out To Hell with the Devil.
Oh, yeah.
When that came out, there was a big controversy about that in 1986. So it's just the natural extension. I like, Striper should piss people off.
Right.
You know, it pisses people off that there's a Christian heavy metal band, and that's good. And I told Michael, I'm like, dude, I get it. I tweeted, you know, he takes a lot of shit. You know, and for a guy that stood up for what he believes in for 35 odd years, he still, it weighs him down, I can tell. So I want to say, listen, I love that title.
Yeah.
It's not Goddamn Evil. It's God Damn Evil. Like, God damns evil people. So, yeah, and that's kind of, you know, I really like that idea. And Drinking with Jesus, once again, my wife hates it. You right. know, it's blasphemy. You know, f***ed up, you're drinking with Jesus. It's not blasphemy. Drinking with Jesus, when I first heard the title, and they said, are you comfortable with this song title? I said, well, what does it mean? It means drinking alone. You know, I got no friends. I'm here drinking with the Lord, drinking with Jesus. And it's actually street slang. I really like the concept of that. And
yeah.
I don't know what Johnny Andrews has been through in his life, but he wrote Judas. He wrote Painless. He wrote Drinking with Jesus. Like, he's got some deep shit going on as far as lyrically. So,
definitely.
You know, but that's another one. It's just this great idea.
I forgot, but Judas was originally written for another band, wasn't it?
If you look at the songwriting credits on Judas, it's written by Rich, Johnny, and there's another guy on the I don't know if, because we have the cheap ass AC/DC, and I can't remember his name right now, and I know exactly what it is, but I think the band was called I'm just gonna kill you. Justin Cordell is his name. And I think the name of the band, I can't remember what it was, We As Humans or something like that. But he had written this song with Johnny and had to leave the business, or the band broke up or whatever it may be. And Johnny was like, we got this song. And so him and Rich kind of retooled it, rewrote it. And suddenly we've got this massive hit. And there's another song on the record, which I think should be a single at some point, called Elevator, that was written with the guys from 3 Days Grace.
Oh, cool.
And once again, you know, kind of went through the Rich and Johnny ringer when 3 Days didn't want to use it. And we've got another great song. So once again, you know, a great song is a great song. Whoever wrote it, good for them. But it's how you sing it, how you play it, the vibe of it. It's all important. You know, like when Judas, I'm reading these lyrics at first, and I'm like, okay, well, this is about betrayal, and not about betrayal of somebody else. It's about betraying yourself. And that's the worst type of betrayal. You know you're making the bad decision. You know it's the wrong thing to do, but you do it anyways. And I think that's another reason why Judas is so popular, is because people can empathize with that song and understand what it means to take that one more drink or eat that one more cookie or, you know, run the red light, you know, knowing that it's the wrong thing to do, but you just decide to do it anyways. And that's what Judas is all about. So when I read these lyrics from Johnny, I have to run them through my ringer and then sing them and sell them. You know, I didn't write the song, but I have to sell it. And that's kind of, that's my job as a singer. And I love the fact I got to introduce that song to the world. And I thank Justin all the time for like, dude, I'm so glad that you didn't do this, you know? Because once again, I mean, that song is the song for Fozzy at this point in our career. Hopefully we'll have bigger ones, but if we don't, we got the one we needed.
Absolutely. There's just a couple more things. The book, I know you've written a few books. The last book you written, No is a four-letter word.
Yes.
I love how you read it on audible.com. I guess I'm giving them a shout out, but I listened to that. I think it's great.
Thank you. Yeah, well, what happened was when I did The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, the idea for the audiobook came up, and I wanted to do it, but it was a really bad deal, and they wanted me to come to California and like live out there for like a week, and I was like, I'm not doing that because I'm not getting paid anything, you know? We got to do it in Tampa. No, you said you were going to do it contractually at our studios. And I was like, you know what? Fuck you guys. I'm not doing shit. Do it yourself. So they got some Shakespearean actor to do it, which I still get complaints about because he didn't know anything about wrestling or music. So, you know, there's a guy that I had a big feud with called Rey Mysterio, and he does a 619 is his finishing move. At 619 is his area code for San Diego. Mm-hmm. And this guy's like, and then Rey Mysterio did the 619, and like people are like, oh, you didn't even know us. So I was like, okay. So when the time came for Noah's a four-letter word, I was like, I am doing this myself. Thankfully, it's half the size of Best in the World, because it takes a long time and it's hard to do. It's a long process because you have to enunciate every single word and still have pronunciation and still have character, and you're just reading it over and over and over again. And I didn't have an engineer. I was just going on my own. And thankfully, it worked out, and I'm glad you heard it. And a lot of people are enjoying it, because I was like, there's no way I'm ever having another audiobook without me reading it again. Yeah, and if it is somebody reading it, it's going to be someone that actually knows what the hell they're talking about.
Have you heard Sebastian Bach read his book?
No.
It is hilarious.
I'm sure it is.
Because he laughs at his own jokes, and he is hilarious
He's got such a funny voice to begin with, and he does laugh at his own jokes. I can just he gets such a kick out of himself. I can totally hear that.
Did you hear the story about him? In his book, he said, he's talking, I love this about you guys, when you first met, I guess you first met Axl Rose, and he's telling that story about you in the studio. And when he mentions Eddie Trunk, he doesn't say Eddie Trunk. He just says, and the DJ.
I know. He just totally jobbed Eddie out, which I was laughing at. Sebastian was actually in the...
That was an amazing story.
He was also in Uncensored, Unleashed, Unknown, the original Fozzy documentary. Sebastian was in that.
That's
great. Dee Snider was in it. Mike Portner was in it. So, yeah, it's that's what I said, you know... I really wanted to make sure that I did it myself. And it was not easy to do. So anybody who's ever done an audiobook of their own.
Do you have somebody in there like producing you saying?
No.
Okay.
No, that's the thing. I just was like, for whatever reason, I just went to a studio near my house where I record, you know, my podcast sometimes if I need a studio. And I just sat there and started reading it. And if I fucked up, I would just redo it. And if I didn't like it, I know what they're looking for. Hmm. You know, and if there was something that I just didn't feel was right, I would do it again. I asked a couple questions, and, you know, you know, you can't sing things. I was singing the songs, and you can't do that. Oh. So they gave me a big list of corrections at the end of it that I had to redo.
That's weird they give you rules because, you know, people are buying. It's for you. It's your book. You
yeah,
know?
But I mean, if there was a song title, you can't sing it. Mm. Oh. That was one of the rules, you know? And so it's like, okay, once you learn that, you're like, okay, I get it. So
That's cool, man. Yeah. The last thing is I actually got you something for letting me be a part of your podcast today.
Sure thing, man.
So
hold on one second.
Let me unwrap
what you got?
It here.
What you got, kid? This guy came in here and brought a whole bunch of stuff. He's unwrapping a box. Good Lord. Wow, man. That's very cool. It's like a Fozzy. It's almost like a gold record, except for we don't have a gold record. Presented to Chris Jericho by Good Company to commemorate the Fozzy long-playing album and compact disc, Judas. Very, very cool. Long playing album, yeah. That's it. What does ARA stand for?
Oh, it's hardest. I cannot.
Oh, okay, well, that's actually you based that on the real thing. Right. This is a really cool gift, my man. And I'll tell you what, we'll take a picture with this too, definitely, to show everybody at home the great gift that you gave me. But still, dude, you got another 10 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ask me about other stuff.
Okay, other stuff. I love in your book when you talk about Yoko. When you were in the restroom, that is a hilarious story.
Right. Yeah, man. We were at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, my cousin Chad and I. And we go every year. We did for a while. Then I couldn't go the last couple of years for different reasons. But it was the year Ringo got inducted. And so Chad and I, we know a lady who can get us on the floor. But we don't have anywhere to sit because seats there cost like 10 grand a pop. So they can't kick us off the floor, but we basically have nowhere to go. So I was like, you know, I've been trying to meet McCartney for years, man. And it's just like, I never could meet him. And I see the table is right at the front and it's Paul and his wife and Ringo and his wife and Yoko and Olivia, George's widow. And I notice when bands play, everyone stands up. So no one knows who's sitting where at that point. So Green Day comes on and they start playing. Everyone stands up. I said to Chad, I was like, dude, I'm going. So I start walking through the crowd and like, hey, man, how you doing? How's it going? What's going on? How are you? And get to the front of the crowd. And there I am. I'm standing literally right next to Paul McCartney and Ringo. And Green Day's playing American Idiot. Hey. And Paul's going, hey. And everyone, the whole crowd's like, Paul's just eyes yelling, hey. So finally it ends and everyone starts sitting down and Paul starts walking with his bodyguard, and I'm like, okay, this is my chance. So there's a line of tables in the middle. Paul's on the right side, I'm on the left side, and we're kind of walking down this line until finally we meet at the end. What a coincidence. Wow, funny seeing you here. And I'm like, hey, Paul, like, Green Day was great, weren't they? He's like, oh, yeah, man, they're f***ing good. What a great band. And I was like, he had a security guard in front of him, and I said, I noticed that you have security in front of you. I said, do you need me to be your behind security, back security, in case, you know, you get attacked by ninjas? And I'm like, why did I say that? You know, that's a stupid thing to say. And he's like, ninjas? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, no, I'm okay. And I go, high five, Paul. You know, he gives me a high five. Because I was trying to be cool. And at the end, I was just like, I couldn't. I was like, hey, Paul, high five. So we're just freaking out. We're excited. And I'm, Chad, I finally met McCartney. This is great. This is so cool. So when we were getting pretty loaded at this point in time, because there's a couple waitresses on the floor that liked us and were being nice to us and giving us free alcohol and shit. So then we go into the bathroom, and as we're in the bathroom, a guy comes in and goes, everybody leave, I got Yoko, and she wants to get in. She needs the bathroom. So everyone's kind of laughing. He's like, no, I'm serious. Everyone's got to clear out. So everyone clears out, and I'm just standing there by myself. There's no one else in there. I'm like, screw it.
That is ballsy.
I'm going to go in the bathroom stall. Why? I don't know. What am I going to do? I don't know. So I go in the stall. I lock the door and I go put my feet on the toilet seat and crouch down as if like, you know, like I'm a spy. You know, you don't want to have your feet on the ground. So I'm like I'm crouching on the toilet.
Is the door locked?
The door's locked. Okay. Yeah. So Yoko comes in and, you know, she didn't sound like this, but in my mind, I'm hearing this Japanese like, oh, okay, I go to left and you go to right or something. So she has a friend with her and the gods of, you know, bathrooms are watching over me because she goes in the left stall and her friend goes in the right stall and I'm in the middle stall. And I'm sitting there crouched on the toilet seat and I hear like this kind of like sound of a, you know, dress being dropped, and I see this swath of like black cloth underneath my toilet stall, and she starts peeing. I'm like, Thank goodness. Like, it'd be really embarrassing if she was, you know, going to take a poop, right? So she pees, she finishes up, she walks out. And I'm like, okay, this is my chance. So I open the stall, I walk out, and I'm like, oh my God, I thought this was the men's room. She's like, oh, it is the men's room. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. Meanwhile, I'm thinking, it's like, okay, this is Yoko Ono, one of the most famous people on the planet and has been for 50 years. How many times has she opened a closet and there's somebody in there, or somebody looking in her window, or someone in a bathroom stall going, I thought this was the men's room? Obviously, she knows I'm full of shit, but she's really nice. So we go to the sink and we start washing our hands, because I might be a pervert, but I'm not a barbarian. I still want clean hands. So we start washing my hands, and I'm going to dry them off. I don't have a towel. There's no towels. And she has a stack of napkins. She goes, here, use one of these. You can't have wet hands. Like, she's yelling at me for having wet hands because you might get cracked skin or something. So I dry my hands off, and I say, are you having fun, Yoko? She goes, oh, yes, it's so nice to see everybody. I'm so happy to be here. I'm like, well, thank you. You know, thanks for the napkin. Have a great time. Okay, you have fun. And she walks out, and I walk out, and the giant security guard standing there, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck just happened. So that was it, man. And then the epilogue of the story is, we go to the after party, and Paul is sitting there talking. It's Paul and his wife, and Joe Walsh and his wife, and they're at a table talking, and people are coming up to Paul and saying hi to him. Then he goes to, like, the buffet area, he's getting some cheese, and everyone's starting to gather around, and they're taking pictures of him now. And I remember hearing on a podcast that he did by Chris Hardwick, who I still freaking hate for getting Paul McCartney on his show, was that Paul loves talking to people, but when people started taking pictures with him, he starts getting very uncomfortable, because then he has to become that guy. And I was like, hey, Paul, like, you know, if people are bothering you, like, I can ask them to leave you alone. And he looks at me and goes, who the fuck are you, man? He goes, are you a security, or are you a cameraman? I'm like, cameraman? Does he think I'm like TMZ or something? He goes, listen, if I need some help with the ninjas, I'll let you know. Until then, go away. And as he walks away, all I can think of was, he remembered the ninjas. He knows who I am. That's great. So that was it, man. The time I met those guys. So
that's a great story. And one of my favorite podcasts you have is the Heaven's Metal, because me and my brother grew up listening to Stryper and, mm-hmm. and Bride. And my question is, would you ever have Bride on your show? They're so hard to get. I mean,
well, it's funny because Dale Thompson came to our show that we had in Louisville, I think back in 2012. And I was actually friends with Dale for years. In the early days of email, he was one of the guys that I happened to just find and was following him. And we kind of exchanged. He was a big bodybuilder guy for a while, and like, just one of the best voices and you'll ever find. And Bride was still doing some stuff at the time. And the last I heard, somebody I was talking to knew Dale and said that he moved to South Africa or something like this, or South America or something.
Yes.
Do you know about this?
Yeah. Yes. He had mentioned, because I tried to get him on, and he had mentioned something like that. He lived far away.
Yeah, far away. I guess he found some girl, because at the time he was getting divorced.
He did get remarried.
Or whatever. I went to church with him one time. Oh, I met all of his kids. Wow. So yeah, I had a little bit of an experience with Dale, and he was a great guy. But man, if you guys are listening and you heard the Heaven's Metal podcast with Richard Christie and Howard Jones, that guy could sing like a mofo, and Snakes in the Playground is their best record.
They're making a new album right now that's supposed to be like a continuation of that.
They've always said that.
Snake Eyes, though. I think it's Snake Eyes.
They've always tried, but I mean, you know, sometimes I find bands have that moment in time where they're at their peak and it's hard to recapture. But hey, I've bought every Bride album, even when they went grunge and they went industrial and
dropping on.
Yeah, and I still love his voice. So, you know, if he's singing something, if he sings the Phone Book, I'll listen to it.
Right on, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, I appreciate
Good stuff, Scott. You did good.
Thank you. Thank you.
I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if you'd want to talk wrestling or music, but I was very, very pleasantly surprised that you wanted to talk Fozzie. And
I love Fozzie.
Great stuff. Who's the biggest guest you've had on your show on Good Company?
So the most views I've had, I was totally blessed to have Brian Welch from Korn.
Wow, yeah.
He actually showed up. And
it's Monkey, right? Or is that Head? That's Head.
Head.
Yeah, Head, yeah.
And that's gotten, for me, that's right now, I checked it today, and it was like 72,000 views. For me, that's huge.
That's huge.
And he was totally, totally cool. I've had Michael Sweet on there, LeJean from Seven Does, yeah. Clint. Corey Lowry tomorrow.
Nice. He played with Fozzy for a tour.
Yeah, how was that? That's awesome.
We had so much fun. He played in Stuck Mojo for years, obviously, and our bass player kind of ditched us, and Corey came in at the last minute and killed it. We had a great time. Good guy. Fun to be around.
That's great.
So, yeah, yeah.
And one of my favorite bands also is Seven Dust, and I was wondering, that would be so cool if Fozzy and Seven Dust did something.
We've always talked about it. I know there's a lot of camaraderie between those guys. You know, obviously for years they played together up and down the roads, but yeah, man, absolutely. It's very cool, and the show is Good Company. And where can we find it?
Definitely. I do not currently have a website right now, but I'm on Facebook. YouTube. Yeah, YouTube, and my YouTube is, let me see,
youtube.com.
there it is.
Scott Bowling, just look up Scott Bowling Good Company. Go check that out. scottbowling1580@gmail.com if you want to talk to him. But good stuff, dude. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
What's your favorite Fozzy record? All That Remains?
My favorite is All That Remains.
Really? Yeah.
I love that album. It just it's like, you know, music is a soundtrack to your life. And I remember just digging into that album and listening to it in my car. That was like my car album.
Yeah. We still play Enemy. Some of the guys in the band is like, oh, we should drop it. I'm like, we can't drop it, dude. It's too many people have too many great memories about that time frame. So Enemy stays. So there you go, man. Good
Thank
talking
you
to you.
Me.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
I give you an A+.
Awesome.
Thanks again to Scott Bowling of Good Company. Check out his show, Good Company, on YouTube or on Facebook at Good Company with Bowling. He just had Rich Ward on the show talking about 90s metal with Octane's Jose Mangan. Check it out. He did a great job. And don't forget, January 4th, Wrestle Kingdom 13, Jericho versus Naito 2, available on New Japan World. You're not going to want to miss this. It's going to be a brutal fight to the end. All right. And speaking of a brutal fight, this has nothing to do with it. I got Sami Zayn returning to Talk Is Jericho, though, one of my favorite guests. He's currently out of the WWE with double shoulder surgery. He came and visited with me when Fozzy played in Montreal. Great conversation with just an amazing, introspective, interesting guy. Sami Zayn will be here on Friday on Talk Is Jericho. Until then, stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big gift.